Thorpe. He's a player that came over in the Juan Soto trade to San Diego from New York. And to be able to get the opportunity to bring him into the White Sox organization is very exciting. Very polished, right-handed starter, an elite changeup, and he's got strong pitchability. He's performed throughout his minor league career, and he has been nothing short of excellent in spring training. We feel like he's going to be part of our starting rotation for years to come. Jairo Iriarte, another right-handed starter. He's pitched up to double A. Very unique arsenal, power fastball, slider, bowling ball type fastball, just a chance to be a really impactful major league player, a major league reliever presently. In Wilson, he is a guy that can plug right into our bullpen. I feel like he can be an effective reliever for us, and excited to have him part of this package. And then Zavala, a high ceiling, potentially impactful center fielder that was 18 years old and was productive in low A with San Diego, and will be joining our organization. But we feel like it's a very good hall of talent, both that can impact our major league club, right out of the gate, and then plenty of opportunities within this deal to really get some impactful players. Being that we're still a couple weeks away from opening day, it gets an opportunity for us to get around these players and get a better idea of who they are as people, and certainly more so on players and what makes them effective. And then we'll make decisions from there. But if you're looking at Thorpe, Wilson, Iriarte, we think that there's a strong chance that they're going to be on our major league team at some point. And then in addition, Zavala, obviously a very young player, and look forward to watching his growth throughout the year. He's certainly one of the top prospects in our game, and look forward to shaking.
Well, hello, White Sox fans, and welcome to another edition of Future Sox Podcast, live and streaming on the interwebs. My name is Ian Eskridge. Joining me tonight is James Fox. How you doing, James?
Hey, great to be with you again, Ian. How's it going?
Indeed, sir. I will say that there's not really a ton going on, but there's a lot of stuff to get to.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just go ahead and hop into it here right quick. So going off of those Chris Getz quotes, what do you think that we can look at for a Thorpe estimated time of arrival? Are you thinking it's like in the next 2 months, or do you think it's later this year?
Yeah, I guess I would say anytime after, like, I think April would probably be a surprise, but I think anytime after that, I think it kind of depends where they send him to, right? Like right now, if you made me guess, I'd say he goes to Charlotte. I mean, there's other guys too, like if Nastrini doesn't start on this team, is he first? Yeah, you would think so, right? You have Schuster, who obviously has had some struggles that we'll get to. Jake Eater, I don't know where Jake Eater is, but I mean, in theory, if Jake Eater goes to Charlotte, he could run off five good starts. You know what I mean? So like, I guess it kind of depends on where he is in their pecking order, but I do kind of expect to see him fairly quickly just based off what they've kind of said. I know like Bruce Levine this weekend, like on 670, like thought that he might be in the rotation to start the year, which look, I don't think it makes sense for the White Sox. I know people get mad at me, like when I talk about the service time stuff, and like, I get it, but like, look, like it's collectively bargained. And like when your owner's Jerry Reinsdorf, like I think more times than not, you're just going to take that seventh year when you can. And it's not like he's definitely ready, right? It's like him, he's a little bit of a different case, I think. Like he hasn't even pitched at AAA. So, but no, I mean, if you told me he's in the rotation on May 15th, like I wouldn't be a surprise based on who's starting in it, right? I mean, he's definitely one of their seven or eight that they're like in contention for five spots.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you listen to Ethan Katz, he says that there's 10 guys vying for those starting roles. So, I mean, we'll get into the starting pitching here in a little bit, but I mean, there's a lot of names to consider. But also, you know, one thing I know you wanted to touch upon tonight was service time. And just, you know, I mean, the idea of service time manipulation as it used to be has definitely changed with the collective bargaining agreement. You know, especially when dealing with somebody like a Nastrini or, you know, possibly Cannon or, Thorpe also, like realistically, the only time that the teams really get rewarded for, you know, other than wins, which this team, it's not a concern. The only time they get really rewarded is when you get a rookie of the year, you know? So, what do you think? What are your thoughts on the service time stuff?
Well, no, and I just saw the Padres are like Jackson Merrill's going to make their team. But I mean, if you're them, right, like you need all your good players on the team to try to make a playoff, the playoffs in a loaded NL West. And if he's awesome and he wins rookie of the year, like you get like the 31st pick in the draft or whatever. That's totally worth it. Like if you know, like if Colson Montgomery, you know, doesn't come up until late in the year and he still has rookie status like next year, like I would push for him to start on the big league team for that reason, just because it's like worth it to try to get the prospect incentive or whatever. But I mean, when you're like these borderline guys that like could be in the rotation but they're not necessarily ready, like I just assume teams are going to send guys down to like get the extra year. And like it's crummy. Like, I'm not here like pretending like it's great. It's not. It's collectively bargained. Like the low men on the totem pole there don't really, you know, they get sacrificed a little bit by the big money guys. And it like continues to happen. So, you know, like if Tuki Toussaint is in your rotation for 3 weeks because they want to leave Nick Nastrini down, like I don't think anybody should really be surprised by that. Like I don't necessarily think that's going to happen, but because like the White Sox haven't really done it that like they did it with Loy and some of those guys like before signing, but like Vaughn, they didn't do it. I mean, Vaughn is sucking up service time. Crochet, they didn't do it, you know? So yeah, so I don't really know. I mean, with it, just they should probably take their best five, but there are 40 man considerations too.
Yep. So Jairo Iriarte. So we've had a little bit of time to digest this deal since the night of when, you know, of course there's a little state of shock and, you know, like you try and rush out the content as quickly as you can. Your thoughts on what you think Jairo Iriarte's role is going to end up being, and what do you think for an ETA on him?
I think I would still say probably 2025 for him. I know like they've said that it could be this year. I just think there's going to be guys like ahead of him. I think he probably go now. Look, if they start him in triple, then I think that like changes things a little bit. Right. I think he goes to double as a starter. They get him as many innings as possible. I think, you know, we kind of talked about some mild reliever risk with him. I don't really see that. I know like the Padres were going to do that, but it wasn't because he'd failed. They did it because they were going to like hike him to the big leagues for like a playoff run in a relief role. The White Sox have no reason to do that. Getz kind of talked about how they think he's a starter. I think he's one of the five in Birmingham, and you know, you get him as many innings as possible. And I think he's pretty exciting. You know, I think he's young. He's in Double A. He throws really hard. He's skinny, right? But yeah, no, I think he's starter until he proves to you that he can't do it. If you told me he got starts down the stretch this year or, you know, at some point, like I'd believe you, but I'd predict 25 probably.
Yeah, that was kind of along the lines of what I was thinking if you didn't push him to a reliever role. But at this point in time, I don't really see what the point in that is. I mean, yeah, you've got some command concerns every once in a while, but from the, you know, I've watched probably like four or five of his starts, and it seems to me that if he's having command issues and somebody comes out to the mound, it's like next second, you know, like the next pitch that the, you know, that he throws, it's like he's locked back in. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things. I think that they work on him with his repeatability and in his mechanics, and hopefully that, you know, he streamlines it and he just goes, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's not Prelander Baroa, right? Where this stuff really plays up, like in shorter outings and two pitches, right? Like Prelander Baroa can throw his two pitches and be a eighth inning guy. Like Iriarte doesn't have to do that. He has enough of a mix to start. So, and how many, do you know offhand, how many innings did he throw last year? Because they moved him to the pen for a little bit, but then...
Oh, Baroa?
No, Iriarte, because then he did start again, like towards the end of the year. They like put him back in the rotation. So, I mean, I want to say that it's at least 70 some. So he should be throwing 190
some.
Okay, good. So he could throw like 130 or 140, like you would think, if they would let him do so. So yeah, no, I think he's a definite starter. I think if they would have come out and said like they see him as a bullpen piece, I think their trade return's a lot worse. Like you had to get they got two starting pitchers that are fairly close to the majors, a big league reliever, and then Zavala. So yeah, I think that's the plan. He stays in the rotation.
Yeah, to clarify, it was 90.1, so it was 0.1 innings off. That's pretty much where I'm at. And we'll see how they handle it. And I think one thing that we definitely don't have any idea right now is how Josh Barfield and Chris Getz run this thing. We don't know how they're going to push players. We don't know how patient they're going to be. We don't know, what they expect from these guys. It's going to be one of those things where we have to learn over time how they're going to handle it. If it's going to be, done on an individual by individual basis, or if they have like some sort of guidelines that they want to meet, who knows?
Yeah. So. And I mean, it's the first time Paul Janish has even like done the job, like in a major league capacity, like, you know, like some of the individual stuff, like the soft factors, like I'm sure he was doing some of that stuff at Rice, which is why they think he's a good fit for this job, right? Like he understands baseball. He understands development. Like he knows how to talk to players. But I mean, the actual job, like he has not done. Now, the two people above him that are running this organization have both done the job. Your current general manager did the job, like with, two other guys and whoever else, like with sticking their hands in it, like totally, like maybe not so much like doing the way Chris Getz would have necessarily done things, So. Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's one of the things that I'm like interested in following, like for future Sox all year. Like, what kind of differences do we see? Because there's a lot of the same faces, but it's definitely not like the same people running things.
Yeah, no, it's gonna be this is gonna be a completely different way of I'm almost positive that we're gonna see some really different ways they handle things. So, So one thing I've seen floating around on the social media sites is Steven Wilson, and the fact that he is a fly ball pitcher and that people are concerned about his viability in guaranteed rate field. And so I wanted to bring up this graphic from Baseball Savant. And so as you can see, he is in the first percentile in ground ball rate. So he does not get any ground balls. So yes, you're going to see a lot of fly balls, but the other thing that you do see is that the expected batting average is 184, which is in the 99th percentile. And then his hard hit percentage and his average exit velocity are both really, really good. So it people are not hitting the ball hard off of him. So that's why I'm not concerned. And I think that, it's a good pickup for this bullpen because, as we're going to get into a little bit later, it's going to be kind of an interesting bullpen. It's going to be a lot different. There's not going to be hardly any of the same faces, like the amount of roster turnover on this team has been insane. I just wanted to show that. You got any thoughts on Steven Wilson?
No, I mean, I just think like going back to what we've kind of talked about with Brian Bannister, it seems like he just like wants lots of different profiles, like in the bullpen, right? Like these guys are all really different, like the guys that are going to be down there. And I think look, if Steven Wilson pitches well enough for them to flip for something at the deadline, I think that's a win, right? I think they got their three prospects and a big league reliever who they think they can trade for something else at some point. So, you know, hopefully it works. I will say, just like, it took this guy forever to get to the majors, huh? Like, drafted in 2018 out of Santa Clara. He's 29. So
yeah,
he was probably taking it. He was like probably 23 at the time. So yeah. So
one thing I also will bring up, that is not on any stat sheets, visiting Chris Getz, philosophy and the way he's trying to do things about getting clubhouse guys and guys that do all the right things. People love Stephen Wilson in San Diego. Like, they, like, he's one of all, like, their whole entire fan base. He's like one of their favorite players. He's known to do a lot of charity work and be a really great guy. So he kind of fits into the whole mold of a bunch of the guys that they're trying to bring into this team to try and change the culture. I know how much everybody loves that word, but I'll go ahead and bring that up anyway, just because, you know, it is something of note to see the guys that they are bringing in and kind of the mental headspace that they occupy, you know, and how they handle their business and, you know, things that they do. So another nice thing to see.
Yeah. It seems like lots of guys that's like been a focus, right? Like Michael Soroka is one of those guys. I guess like Chris Flexen's one of those guys, like the veteran hitters that they like. That's why it's kind of weird, right? That Kevin, or is it, I always want to say Kevin, is it Kevin Pillar? Yeah. Right. That's yeah. So like, that's like his thing. That's why he's always on like playoff teams. And my guess is he'll finish the season on a playoff team too, because that's just kind of like the guy that he is. I mean, I know that Martin Maldonado has some of those things. So,
yeah, no, I, you know, as having those guys that are positively affecting, you know, the clubhouse are certainly worth having. Samuel Zavala's swing, the other part of the return on this deal. And one thing that I have heard, and it was one thing that, you know, after watching a few ABs, and it's hard to find Samuel Zavala ABs, you know, it's like they're not readily available with good video. But one thing I did notice is that, you know, one of the things that people talk about when they talk about him is that, yes, he does have plus power and he does have an advanced approach at the plate. But one thing they worry about is as he goes up higher in the levels is that he might have a little bit of problem catching up with the high fastball. So I can't show you in the video because for whatever reason, it's not letting me show it. But that was one thing that I also had a concern with watching his swing is, you know, it's one of those things that he's, I really hope, because he's got a really big leg kick. And if that timing mechanism doesn't match up well with high velocity, we're going to be seeing some strikeouts on high velocity up top. So,
yeah, and I know the write-up at Pipeline anyway, like, kind of talks about how he, you know, he has a lot of plate discipline and he got on base, and he doesn't chase a ton, but he misses like a lot of pitches like in the strike zone, they've kind of said. So, but I mean, they put a 55 hit on him, so. I mean, we'll see. It was at low A. I would imagine he'll be in Winston, and we'll kind of see how that goes. And then, look, even if he's great at Winston, we're going to want him to show it to us at Birmingham, right? Like, it's just kind of what we always kind of do. But I think he's a little bit interesting. He's really young. I like the fact that he takes walks. Like, they just don't have a ton of guys that do that. Obviously, Deloach isn't the level of prospect as this guy, but it's like similar where it's, they've said that he's like has plate discipline, but he also K's a bunch. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, that shows in the numbers, you know, that he does have a really good approach and he's very selective about what he does swing at. And, you know, so the strikeups do pile up regardless. And the fact that there is some swing and miss. So, I guess, one thing that, we wanted to bring up here was the re-rankings of the Major League Baseball and the MLB pipeline re-rankings here. So I'm going to go ahead and bring that up right quick. So, and it didn't work. Good job. Nice job. So there it is, the 1 through 10, with Drew Thorpe coming in at 3, Samuel Zavala coming in at 6, and then Iriarte coming in at 9. You have any thoughts on the re-rankings here?
No, I think that's good. I mean, I think a lot of people have 4 and 5 could be flipped. You know, you kind of talked about how you would have Thorpe 2. But yeah, this makes sense to me, I think. I mean, Gonzalez, Nastrini probably needs to be higher. So I think I'd probably have Nastrini 6 still in front of everybody else. And then I have Eater like a little bit higher too. But those are my 10 for sure. I'd probably have Gonzalez 10 and then kind of put the other guys in there. But I mean, you know, it's up for debate. It's fine. Like I would also, if I re-ranked, I think I'd put Zavala like ahead of Iriarte. I feel like you might not, but yeah, I mean, these are the 10, I think, for sure.
Yeah. The Zavala thing, you know me, I haven't seen enough of Zavala to feel like he should be that high. I mean, I know that the power tool is ridiculous. And the fact that he is a good defender from what I'm hearing. But until I see more of that, for him to be above Iriarte, I don't know. It would be close, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, like we have our quibbles with the MLB pipeline list in general, you know, just in like some like little numbers movement, you know, here and there anyway. Question from Trey Williams says, how does
I saw that. Yeah.
James feel about comparing Dom Fletcher or Josh Reddick after the trade? Just, you know, it's spring training, but
yeah, you know, it is fake. Yeah. It's fake baseball. I mean, I think I said Josh Reddick, I said Cole Calhoun, like that type of guy, mostly because I thought like comparing him to Adam Eaton was lazy. And honestly, like I didn't even know he'd been that bad. Because I'm letting Ian watch the spring training game, so I don't have to be quite honest with everyone. But yeah, I mean, I check it out. Like I've seen statistics, but I don't really read too much into them because they don't count. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we'll see if like the comparison makes any sense. But I mean that type of guy, I think defense, first hits righties, can't play against lefties. More power than it seems. So I don't know. I know Trey doesn't think that he told me that on Twitter too. He doesn't think that count makes any sense, but that, you know, I was just trying to Cliff Notes version when they made the trade, like, hey, this is like kind of who he's similar to. So,
yeah. I just brought up 11 through 20 here just so everybody could see how the, how everything else is kind of bounced down, post, trade. And you know, I mean, no major changes obviously, but for the most part, like everybody behind him just kind of bumped back 3 spots, you know. Not really anything crazy here, just, you know, some extra stuff here, you know, that you know, Shane Drohan managed to hang on, and you know, who knows when we'll end up seeing him again anyway. So so let's move on to everybody's favorite topic, which is spring training battles. Do you want to start? Now, I know the one that, that you know, we've been talking about the most this entire time has been Sheets versus Moustakas. And, you know, from what I've seen, and, you know, it's been about 40% of the games that they've played. And, you know, Moustakas has not really impressed so much. He's been having a pretty rough spring training, but you know, he's got 12 years of service time or something like that. And yeah, you know, he's been around for a long time. So how much do you really put into his spring training numbers? And you know, like what does he look like in a cage? I have no idea. So, you know, it's like, I don't know how ready he is for the season to ramp up, but I do know that he's old and his numbers have been going down for a few years now.
Yeah.
How do you feel about that quote unquote battle that's going on right now?
Well, I think it just like depends if they want to keep Moustakas. Like, do they care, right? Or will they just cut him? Like, if they're totally fine with saying, like, you didn't make the team, that's it. Like, because I don't really see him going and playing in Charlotte. And, like, Sheets has an option. So it could be, like, you add Moustakas to the 40, give him a shot. If he stinks, you just DFA him, whatever. And then, because Sheets can go to Charlotte. It's not like they have to get rid of him. So I think that could be, like, the difference there. I know we've been talking about how many 40-man spots they're going to have to create. I know with our guy Braden Shoemake, he's a little hurt. But it seemed like there was some push for him to possibly make the team. And now with Sosa like not really in the picture, Rodriguez not really in the picture, they would have to add Remillard back to the 40 anyway. I think Danny Mendick is probably the utility guy. So you're going to have to add him and Pilar both to the 40-man. Will they also with Moustakas? I don't know, but that's definitely the last spot, I think, is either Moustakas or Sheets. If you add Moustakas, you can keep Sheets. If you keep Sheets, I'm not really sure Moustakas will stay in the org, but I mean, whatever. Like, it's not that big a deal. I don't know. That's kind of the way I look at it, though.
Yeah, I mean, the question is really, is that if they decide, I mean, this is going to be the year that you're going to use the option year on Sheets, in my opinion. If you don't use it this year, you're not going to use it next year, you know? And if you want to keep him around, this is the year to use the option year. And hopefully that, you know, he can do something that's going to, improve his game, whatever that is, that's going to help him be more useful to the organization. And if you decide that you want to, that if Moustakas is worth keeping, you burn that option. If you don't think Moustakas is worth it, then, you know, maybe you burn that down the road this year. But I think that this year is the year for Sheets. It's like, we pretty much had him written off before the season. And then they started making all these weird moves, kind of creating some sort of a competition of sorts. But I don't really see there being any like crazy competition for him that's actually put up any results this year. So, you know, so far in spring training, anywho. So,
right. And he would be, I mean, like Sheets could back up at first, which Moustakas would also be doing. But I mean, Mendick could play third. So it's not like you need Moustakas' third base versatility, but I could see them thinking they do because if anything happens to a middle infielder, it almost has to be Mendick, right? And then if you also had an issue at third, it would have to be Moustakas. It couldn't be Sheets. So I don't know, because we've kind of talked about it. Like, this might be the same for Moustakas. I just don't know when you would ever play Gavin Sheets. I really don't, because the only time you would play him is against righties. And you would have to sit a lawyer Vaughn to do it. So, and look, I know that's the same situation for Moustakas probably, but they might feel better about him pinch hitting or giving Vaughn a day. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, a little bit more flexibility there as well. Cause I mean, not that I would really, you know, suggest it, but I mean, you can throw him in at second base. You can throw him at third base. Sheets, you can put in right field, but you know, as we've talked about before with the way that they want to run this organization is they want plus defense. And not that Moustakas is a great defender, but I'd say he's more versatile and probably a slightly better, you know, possibility of defense wherever you'd put him over Sheets. You know, maybe Sheets is a little bit better with everything in front of him at first base. But I mean, we've seen a great play out of Moustakas already in spring training, you know, where he's running into right field catching foul balls, you know. So yeah, that's the whole thing. In the grand scheme of things, does any of this even matter? No, not really. You know, I mean, we're kind of quibbling over something that's, you know, doesn't really matter, you know, for the 2024 White Sox or 2025 for that matter. So let's get to something that does matter. The spring training season so far has shown us some things with the rotation, And today, Nick Nastrini went out and threw four scoreless. He's got a 0.82 ERA through 11 innings with a 0.82 whip and has looked absolutely fantastic. Now, do you think he's going to make the opening day rotation, or do you think he's going to Charlotte? Is that what you have him slated for?
I mean, I assumed that he would be in Charlotte, but I don't know who the fifth starter is then. Because, like, if it's not Tukey, you're talking about another 40-man spot for a guy that's, like, not part of the future, you know, like a Chad Kuhl or somebody along those lines. I don't really know who else it could be at this point. Even if they sign somebody, like, tomorrow, that guy's not going to be in the opening day rotation, right? Like, what have Mike Clevenger or Michael Lorenzen been doing this whole time? Like, are they ready to pitch to start the year? Like, my guess is no on that. So, you know, unless you're like throwing Tukey in the rotation or you're skipping. I mean, I guess you could skip the fifth guy like the first couple times if you wanted to, maybe. And then you start him down. So, look, I feel like if I had to bet on it, I would still say he goes down. But because is he on the 40, Nastrini? I feel like he's not. I feel like he's not, I don't think.
I don't think he is either.
Yeah, I don't think he is. So, like that. So I think that even that adds even more to the fact that I don't think he will make it. But I think his former Dodgers teammate that came along with him in the trade, I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit, but he could, I think he could be on the team, but I feel like Nastrini's going to go to Charlotte.
Yeah. No Nastrini, no Leisure on the 40 man, as we've talked about that one before. That's the hurdle here, you know, is the 40 man at this point, is that they have to, you know, Chris Getz is going to have to make decisions here coming up real soon with the beginning of this season, probably, you know, within the first month of the season, of who he's willing to lose, who he's willing to try and pass through waivers. And we're going to find out a lot here in the next coming weeks.
Mm-hmm. Well, and there are a few 60 man spots they can probably create, right? Like Davis Martin is still on the 40 man. He can go to the 60. You know, I don't know about Jimmy Lambert's status, but I do know that. So Jimmy Lambert's an out of options guy. So he could go on the regular DL and make the team, or he could go on the 60 day and create a 40 man spot. But yeah, I feel like Shane Drohan also will probably go on the 60, I would imagine. So there's two spots right there off the bat. But you're talking about having to create five or six potentially, I feel like. So that's where it gets just a little bit hairy with guys that, you know, we were just talking about Gavin Sheets. Like he has an option, but is that like a roster spot that you need? Like, you know, can you keep Jose Rodriguez and Lenin Sosa and Braden Shoemake if you're going to add Danny Mendick as well? Like, my thought would be no, you can't. So somebody's going. Like, there could be some minor trades coming to clear up space. But, you know, some fairly interesting roster battles for a 65-win baseball team. So, you know, but yeah, I mean, but they do have to finalize the roster at some point.
Yeah, that's the thing, is that the great thing about competition is that there's competition for the roster spots. The bad thing is that there's competition for the roster spots, and the fact that they've got a bunch of guys that they don't want to get rid of still, or they haven't figured out what they are, that's going to make things a little bit more difficult as we move forward here for him to try and clear spots to bring these guys in. I mean, you can't have 90 yeah. guys, you know, it's just the way it works.
Well, but that's where I did think, like, if it was even between Danny Mendick and Braden Shoemake, maybe they do just keep Shoemake because he's already on the 40. You give him a shot to show that he, you know, also can't hit in the majors since he can't hit in the minors. And then Mendick could just go to Charlotte or whatever. But now I think you're going to have to add Mendick to the roster and have him on the team. So
yeah.
What do you do with the other? What do you do with the else? Right. Like, what do you do with the other three guys? Like, I don't really know.
Yeah, that is a question for the ages, and we will find out here shortly. So also, Jonathan Cannon pitched today, allowed one run in four innings. He's got a 2.5 ERA roughly in seven innings pitched this spring. He's looked pretty good. I think he's slotted for Charlotte, is my guess. Your guess as well.
Yeah, did he finish there? I can't remember if he...
I can't either.
Yeah, but I feel like sending him back to Birmingham at this point doesn't really make any sense. But, you know, one of the things that we've often talked about is like the number of veterans or 4A types that might be starting in Charlotte. I just don't know how many spots there are or what they want to do.
He was in Birmingham.
Yeah. So, he hasn't been in Charlotte yet. So, I mean, in theory, like it would be great to have, you know, Jared Schuster, Nick Nastrini, Jonathan Cannon, Drew Thorpe. Like if that's your Charlotte rotation, that's pretty cool. But, you know, I think you're going to have Chad Kuhl and some of these other guys maybe, you know, that we've seen like down there too. So I don't know. They're both, you know, those are all upper minors guys. And I didn't even mention Jake Eater, you know, who likely go. And I don't really care where these guys go. And look, like they could bring a guy straight up from Double A. It's like not that big of a deal. But you do need like places for these guys to like all go pitch.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to go ahead and bring up the guys who are still left in camp here. Just so we can peruse the roster here and see who's still on there. Guys that we know that are injured. Brebbia is in the, you know, in the mode right now where he's just starting to throw off the mound, and he's looked fairly good, but you know, we haven't seen him yet. I mean, any guy that's using a little scooter because of a strained calf, to me it's probably going to take him a little while to ramp up. Joe Barlow, shoulder injury. We don't know how long it's going to be until he comes back. You know, Jimmy Lambert, you know, shoulder. And then we had Perlander Baroa, who had a shoulder as well, but now he's back throwing, and it doesn't look to be anything serious. No surgery needed for either Lambert or Perlander Baroa, so that's good. But there are still a lot of names here. 49 guys still in camp. We know that you know, a couple of guys every day for the last couple of days have been getting sent down. Schuster got sent down. Burdick got DFA'd and got picked back up by the Orioles. So RIPIP for him. Anything stick out to you on the pitching side here? Starters, anywho?
No, not for the starters. I mean, like there's a fifth job that's like up for grabs, it seems. And then, you know, as far as the bullpen is concerned, I mean, there, you know, there's a few guys that I think are definitely, like, we know Michael Kopech now, is going to be in the bullpen for sure. Like, I'm assuming Jesse Chavez is going to get added, like, in some capacity, but I don't know, man. Like, I just don't know. Like, has Brad Keller pitched? Is he ready? Has he done anything?
He's thrown on the backfields, but he's not mm-hmm. ready yet. They said that it wouldn't be too long.
But he's a bullpen guy now, right? Or no?
I mean, who knows?
So maybe he's the fifth starter.
Possible.
Yeah, that, so, you know, and then, you, like, you just have your, like, your Dominic Leone and Brian Shaw's of the world. Like Steven Wilson's definitely on the team. Brebbia's on the team, but like you said, I don't know that he's ready to go. A guy that's interesting, Davey Garcia, former Yankee farmhand, out of options. He's pitched pretty well, so my guess is he's in the bullpen. But again, that's a 40-man spot that he'll keep then, and not go anywhere. So yeah, I would hope that we see him, I would assume, staying in camp. And then, you know, some of these other guys are probably just, you know, like, does Jordan Leisure make it, right? I don't know. You know, he would need to be added as well, but he's one of the better arms on this list for sure. Corey Knebel's hurt. So yeah, there's gonna be 13 pitchers on the team. That's the only thing I know.
Yeah. So a couple of things that I wanted to hit up on the starting rotation side. Fetty and Flexen are both hovering at a 1.5 or above whip for spring training. Fetty's got a 5 ERA and Flexen's got a 2 ERA despite having a 1.5 whip. Is that something that, I mean, I know that it's fake baseball and that they could be working on something, but at this point in camp, is this something that you think that is worrisome?
Yeah, I mean, I think you would hope that the opening day starter would look a little bit better than he has.
Well,
like,
you know,
yeah,
you don't know that.
Yeah, he knows though. And you know what? Like, I guess it could be Soroka, right? But They should start Garrett Crochet opening day because I'll be there, and that's what I would like to see. That would be cool.
Fair enough.
just start Garrett Crochet. But no, I think like Garrett Crochet went from like the man of mystery to like a guaranteed like lock as a starter, right? Like maybe they'll only throw him 3 innings every time, but you make 30 starts of 3 innings. Can he throw 90? Maybe he might be able to do that. I think so. Yeah. So you get him up to 90 innings and then he's part of your rotation in 2025 when you hope to be a little bit better. But yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, some of the changes that Fetty has made come to fruition a little bit once the actual season starts. But I mean, yeah, it hasn't been super promising. Sirocco looks pretty good though.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. So Crochet, 9 innings pitched, 12 Ks, 0 ERA and a 0.78 whip. Not so bad. If he were to be the opening day starter, I would be very happy about that, at least for 3 innings, you know? Yeah, I mean, we did bring this up, Clutch, as someone pointed out, they don't need a fifth starter until April 5th. So, you know, one thing that we had talked about because Cease was here is that there, with Cease being here, he needs a start every 5 days. Now that they don't have that, how would you feel if they did go to a 6-man rotation? Because that was something that we had mentioned as a possibility, not necessarily seriously, but now that Cease is gone, it's a possibility. I mean, what do you think about that? I mean, obviously you'd have to have the arms to be able to do it.
Yeah. But... yeah. They don't have 6 starters, but I mean, yeah, that you could do it now. The reason you couldn't before is because of Cease for sure. Or you could do some sort of like piggyback tandem thing. If you have like a long guy that you like, you know, that you think you're going to need to like come in after Garrett Crochet, you know, something along those lines. But yeah, I mean, because that's the other thing. Like, did you plan on getting into Kopech at all or no?
That's exactly who I was going to bring up, is if you're looking for a piggyback guy, he might be your guy. But again, you know, like the same issue as when he was a starter is that you've got escalated pitch counts. And even when he had his 11-pitch inning the other day, he was behind in every single count when he got his outs. So, I mean, is that going to be, you know, that could be one of those things that just blows up in your face anyway. Yeah. So who knows?
So if you're like me and you're assuming, so I'm assuming that they cut the cord on this project for multiple reasons, right? Like they can't have, you know, the 2-inning starts, right? Where you're like destroying a bullpen for a week, even if you're not planning on being any good. Right. And I think that they're trying to like extract as much value from what is left of Michael Kopech as possible. Right. So like my interpretation of this whole thing has been like, prop him up as much as you can and then see what he's worth. Like, I think they fully intend to just end the Michael Kopech experiment and trade him. Now, does it make more sense to have him pitch in sort of like a long role, like you're saying? Or do you just make him the closer and hope he's good and then trade him? I don't know. Like, I don't really have the answer. Like, I could be sold either way. I'm kind of like you where, like... I just feel like you're going to run into the same problems if you're expecting this guy to pitch multiple innings. I think if you just tell him you're the 8th inning guy, you're the 9th inning guy, like just go out there and like throw fire or whatever, that might be better. And then hope
triple digits.
Yeah. And then hope that. Well, cause he could be fastball slider. Like you don't have to screw around with like another pitch. And then maybe he's one of these power relievers that you're trading at the deadline for a top 100 guy. I mean, who knows? Like if that's the plan, that's what I think they're going to do. But he does make sense as one of the guys that could go 3 innings or something. You know what I mean? So, you know, you have other guys too.
I kind of feel like if he's going to be a piggyback guy, he needs to have a 3rd pitch, you know, but if he's going to be a closer, he can be 2 pitches. I kind of feel like if there's going to be any, possibility of him seeing somebody a second time, he can't just be 2 pitches, just in my opinion, you know? But if he's seeing somebody more than once in 3 innings, things haven't gone to plan, you know, if he's seeing more than like 1 or 2 guys for a second time. So, yeah, that is a conundrum, you know. So we'll see. So I wanted to move to the bullpen. And obviously Leisure has been dominant. And we don't know what the heck's going on with the 40-man as far as that goes. And they would have to really make – a very big decision to put him on the 40-man and just get, you know, start getting rid of some of these other guys. But, you know, Davey Garcia, 1.17 ERA. He's pitched really well. He's got a one, like right around a one whip. Tanner Banks, 1.17 ERA. And, you know, we're going to need lefties. So, you know, it's nice to have some of those guys, you know, like if Bannister's looking for different looks, like he says he is, that's one of them. Dominic Leone has been pretty good. He's got a one whip and he's been fairly decent. Tim Hill is at a 1.5 ERA through six innings. And, you know, I don't know necessarily about his pitching being a different look, but I mean, if you've seen his player picture, that's a different look.
Yeah.
And Jake Cousins has looked really good. For, you know, all intents and purposes, he's 1.8 ERA with a one whip and five innings pitch. And one thing that I've really been looking at, as far as the roster construction goes, is I've been really paying attention to who's getting the most work, you know, because it's either those are going to be guys that are most on the bubble or guys that they think are worth putting on the roster. And all those guys have put up some, you know, have put some innings in. So I don't know, you know, who's going to end up taking all these bullpen spots, that I don't know. But I do know that those guys have been performing. So, you know, if, you know, with the 40 man, the way it is, if they start cutting these guys, somebody's going to have to fill it. Are they going to do it just on name, you know, like Knebel, you know, just because of his name? I don't know. So
well, he's not ready, right? Because I thought he was a lock to be on the team if he were ready. That's the total like bad team closer signing, right? Where Corey Knebel's like racking up saves on a horrible team and then you trade him, but he's hurt too. So, and look, I think there's going to be lots of churn. Like you look at the 40 man, like Leisure will probably go down, but I mean, look, like Jordan Leisure might be the closer of the future for the White Sox. Like we're going to see him. I'm pretty sure we're going to see Alex Spies. I'm pretty sure we're going to see Bailey Horn. We're going to see Prelander Baroa. I just don't know that we're going to see any of them right away, but it's also not like you owe anybody anything. Like these guys are very easy to cut the cord on. Like if somebody's really bad and killing you, like as soon as the season starts.
Yeah, that's one of those things as well, is, you know, like I kind of have the feeling that Getz isn't going to have any of these emotional attachments to any of these guys. And he's going to have no problem, you know, saying, hey, you know, I appreciate what you did, but it's just not going to work out, you know, and you're going to have to find a job somewhere else. Chad Kuhl, he's, you know, they've given him a bunch of innings and he's got a 6.14 ERA. And he's had, you know, he's had some decent innings, but he's had some really bad blow up innings as well. And I know that that was one of those guys that they were talking about trying to figure out if he was going to be good for a, you know, like a long relief role, like type mop up thing. But I don't know. I think they're going to need a lot of mop up men personally. You know, there's going to be a lot of innings to be had by this pitching staff. So, you know, are they going to start, you know, we're going to figure out where they're going to come up with these innings from.
Well, and you would think that, like, they're going to keep, like, I feel like they keep 13 pitchers even if they aren't keeping a fifth starter. So are they going to have a 9-man bullpen to start with four starters? And then you're waiting for a Keller or a signing or somebody to be, like, your other starter. Because you could go... you can go 14 position players if you want. You're just, the teams don't, because you're not allowed to go 14 pitchers. So most teams go 13 and 13, but you don't have to.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, you know, not being able to carry extra pitchers.
Oh, it's a terrible rule.
It's an awful rule because, you know, like all you're doing is increasing the stress on pitchers' arms if they have to pitch too much.
Yeah. So I mean, I think like what the bad owners complained that the smart teams like the Dodgers and the Rays were using too many start. Like they'd call up a guy and they'd throw him fresh and then they'd send him down and they'd call up another guy and then they'd like rinse and repeat and do that over and over and over again. And now it's really hard to do that, like especially with the 13 limit. But yeah, I mean, it's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. Like, I kind of feel like, you know, if you wanted to keep, you know, whatever, like 15 pitchers, you should be able to. No, absolutely. No, absolutely not. He might not be on the team like July 15th.
Yeah.
No, I think he's a definite like trade candidate, because I think he's going to be pretty decent, right? Like, some of the questions about trades, like any reliever that's not named like Jordan Leisure or like one of these young guys, if they're any good, I would think would be on the market. Same thing with a Michael Soroka or a Chris Flexen, awesome first half somehow gone, right? The real questions are on the offensive side with guys like Yoan Moncada and Eloy Jimenez. You know, like, do those guys move if they're putting up good numbers somehow? Like, I think those are the big, but the pitching, yeah. I mean, that's why I understand, like, Wilson as the throw-in, right? He's 29. Is he on the next good White Sox team? Probably not. But he might bring you some sort of decent piece that you can essentially add to the Dylan Cease trade return.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, and it's, you know, as Clutch mentions, you know, it's 29, so there's no reason to hold on to a Wilson. So he would be easy to get rid of, because I'm assuming that he's probably going to put in some work this year and, you know, put up a decent ERA and WHIP, and he'll be wanted, and we've got no reason to keep him around. So
yeah, Brebbia is the same way. Like, all these guys are the same. Like, if, you know, if they get in there, we talked about Knebel, like those sorts of guys.
Yeah, I will mention, you mentioned Jesse Chavez earlier, and I know that he is a longtime veteran pitcher, but man, he has not looked good so far in spring.
Yeah, it might be the end of the road. I mean, and I wonder how willing he is to just like keep playing. Like, if he's willing to go down to Charlotte and hang out, like, I'm sure they would let him do that. And, you know, if he pitches well, like, I'm sure he'd be up, right? I don't know. Like, some of these veterans have opt-outs. They don't really tell us about those, you know, or randomly, like, a veteran pitcher. I know you're familiar with this, but, like, you know, they're just gone all of a sudden. Like, oh, yeah, they had an opt-out, they left. Like, you know, type of thing. Like, because they weren't going to make the team or whatever. I don't know that status with some of these guys.
Yeah, me either. Haven't seen it. On the injury front, we talked about Braden Shumake. He caught his cleat on the edge of the turf, and he's going to be out 2 to 4 weeks. I'm not even sure what kind of an injury it is, other than that he tripped and there's something going on. I did note, I tweeted about it yesterday, kind of, you know, when we did the split squad games yesterday, and no Eloy for the third day in a row. I was like, what is going on here? What are we doing? And Pedro says today that he was just getting a rest. Spring training. Are we going through this again already? But he was back today, and I mean, it's not on TV, so I can't say for sure, but he did get a single in the first inning that I think it was ruled an error. But the announcers were saying that, I don't know who's scoring this game, but it should have been a single. It was like a, you know, hustle single. So he's still running. So hopefully everything's fine.
Yeah.
We'll see. And we talked about the Perlander Barreau and Jimmy Lambert. Perlander's back throwing. Jimmy Lambert's probably going to be out for a couple of weeks, and then he'll start throwing again, apparently, but no surgery. And then Joe Barlow also missing. Anything else for this week that you got, James?
No, I mean, they usually televise quite a few like towards the end, right? So you should have some more here. I'd have to go back and look and see like when they finalized the roster last year, but also it's a different general manager, right? Like, you had that roster up there. I mean, you still have all of like the veteran outfield options are like still in camp. Like, I assume those guys, you have five catchers or four catchers. It seems kind of pointless. So there should be like more cuts coming here so that the actual team can play together a little bit, you would think.
Yeah. I think at this point, yeah, we should be due for like a nice round of like 10 guys being gone here. Cause mm-hmm. it's been like over the last week, it's been like a one guy gone here,
one guy gone here the next day, you know, and it's been like seven cuts in 7 days. And eventually they're going to have to start paring those numbers down. The question is that, you know, is he having, you know, trying to figure out right now, you know, he's got his big board up there and he's trying to figure out which names he can remove off the board and which ones he wants to keep. I mean, it's going to be interesting moving magnets around and stuff, you know?
Well, and then there was like the notes on the free agent pitching. Like, I thought that would move sooner. Like, it seems like that might not happen. Like, now Michael Lorenzen's being linked to the Yankees.
I thought that right off the bat.
Like, Clevinger's asking for 20 some million. Like, I'm just like not that interested in that because I'd prefer a guy that they could flip, and they weren't really able to trade him last year. And I don't know if that was more because of the option than him just kind of being an idiot and teams not wanting him. But if like you're going to make a deal like that, like I want it to be a guy that you're going to be able to trade, and I'm not sure you're going to be able to trade Clevinger, even if he's decent. So, and then like Bob Nightingale today mentioned too, that they had interest in Tommy Pham. I don't know if you saw that, but
So
apparently like he was close to a 1-year deal with the Padres. And if that falls through for some reason, the White Sox are also interested, but it made it seem like he's probably going to go to San Diego. But that's curious. So is that instead of Pilar, is it instead of Fletcher? I don't know. So,
yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be unhappy at the signing. I just wouldn't play fantasy football with him, you know?
Right, exactly. So, hey, I don't want him to get mad and attack me or anything.
Yeah, I'd be mad at your roster decisions, which, you know, you've already got Twitter mad at you over, you know, Justin Fields. So, you know how that goes. Just those people can't punch you in the face about it. So you got anything else this week? All right. So I wanted to make sure that I got this in there before we called it a night. And yesterday, the split squads, the White Sox were playing the Seattle Mariners. And Jacob Burke made quite the catch yesterday. And I wanted to make sure that everybody got a nice, nice good view of this. Go ahead and bring up the audio.
Watch this. Ty Pete hit it a long way. Look at this catch. Look at this catch. Woo! And I like what Pete did. This kid named Burke makes a wonderful effort. Reminds me of Ben Gamble. And he said, dude.
It's good stuff.
Good sportsmanship.
So, yeah, that was a great catch. So I just wanted to highlight it because when you see things like that, you want to, you know, that's like SportsCenter top 10 type stuff. So I wanted to go ahead and throw it up there.
Well, I'm guessing Jacob's going to be the center fielder in Double A, most likely. I mean, Tatum can play there too, but those two guys probably in Birmingham, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, we haven't seen Yoelki Cespedes, so...
He's probably in Charlotte, though, if he's here.
I would imagine so, but... All right. Yeah. I mean, you know,
don't care.
But here's the thing is that, in the past couple of days, I've seen a bunch of guys come up and get time. I saw Duke Ellis. I saw Terrell Tatum. I saw Jacob Burke. I saw, Tyler Nesloney. I've seen a bunch of outfielders. You know who I haven't seen? Yoelki Cespedes. So my question is he going to even be here?
No, he could get released and I wouldn't be surprised. I mean,
I wouldn't be shocked. I mean, I would think that I would have seen him by now. I mean, like I'm seeing Taishi Nakawaki. I'm seeing like Riku Nishida. I'm seeing all sorts of guys from the minor leagues, but I have not seen Yoelki Cespedes. So that makes me kind of go, what's going on here? You know, has he fallen out of the good graces?
I saw that ground ball to Riku Nishida. He wastes no time getting the ball to first base.
Very quick transfer. But, you know, like you also see that it's like a 6-foot high ground ball and he's catching it over his head. So there is that. It's kind of fun.
Well, the natives in Winston-Salem, North Carolina are going to love that, man. So.
Yes, they are. So you good?
All good, sir.
All right. FutureSox.net. You can find all of our written content, and you can find this podcast. You can also find a Patreon link where you can support our content. We will be releasing our personal top 30s here in the upcoming week. That'll be fun. At Future Sox on Twitter. My name is Ian Eskridge at Daily White Sox. He is James Fox at James Fox 917. If you are listening to this in podcast form, know that you can also listen to it in podcast form on YouTube. You can also watch it in video form on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. on YouTube and our Twitch at twitch.tv/FutureSox. We have two other shows. We have the Future Sox Roundup on Monday nights, drops on Tuesday morning, which does not streaming live at the moment, but they plan to at some point. And then we have our MLB edition of the show. It's Future Sox Hot Takes and Heaters with Danny Miller and Nick Morawski. And you will find that on Tuesday nights at 9 o'clock on YouTube and Twitch, and Wednesday mornings in podcast form. I would like to thank you for hopping in tonight and hanging out with us, and we look forward to seeing you guys next week. Thank you so much, and have a great week. For my co-host, James Fox, you have a great night.